everyone. Now, I do know that almost every member of the committee is has either been ill, is getting ill, or who is ill as we talk. And that would probably be the medical environment in Cape Town at the moment, because of the weather, I suppose. But I want to thank those members who have made a sterling effort to be here. Thank you very much. The committee meeting is not likely to be long, because we had a very late communication late yesterday on the commissioner not healthy, not her health not being as it should be with asthma, and and agreeing to keep me informed. I did get a message, SMS to me, and I asked for a letter to be sent to the committee secretary, which I hope has been done by now, indicating that the commissioner was in too much pain to leave Johannesburg. So she will not be here with us this morning. Unfortunately, it's not possible for us to simply cancel meetings like that at the drop of a hat. We have certain processes here in Parliament to proceed on, and we need to respect those processes ourselves. However, I have asked Advocate van der Merwe to join us this morning so that we can address matters that we can with respect to the engagement we've already had and the documentation, and to take a decision to go forward on the matter. So having agreed on that basis, and then under announcements on other business, I think what we can put here is not other business. I did get this agenda late yesterday, and I should have corrected other business, because other business is not what we want to see on an agenda. We want announcements there and adjournment. Because if you want any other business, you can add it when you adopt the agenda. So can we just amend that? I should have done that myself. On that basis, then, of a report of the subcommittee on the Co-ops Amendment Bill, which will be given by the chair of the subcommittee, Mr. Jitlangoma Mabasa, Honourable, we will then not have a continuation of the engagement, but rather a briefing by the advocate and a deliberation on issues at that point. Is that in order? So we'll amend that one. And because of that, we won't have the second part after tea. I'm sure you can see that. That would be deleted, come off the agenda. And we expect then to end at about, you know, quarter to 11. Yay! Right. Are we agreed? Can I have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? Honourable Mabasa, seconded by Honourable James. Thank you. Well, there we are. Over to yourself, Honourable Mabasa, on a brief co-op status report. Not the study visit per se, but the status report. Oh, do we have apologies here? Yes. Honourable van der Merwe.
Chair, may I raise a point of just a point? May I raise a point? Chair, I do think that we should consider that we make a ruling that if somebody who is due to present to our committee is unable to come for whatever reason, and clearly this is a very serious reason, that somebody should be deputized to come and do such presentation, because I think one of us pointed out recently, it pulls you back by weeks if you can't complete the business, and then means we have to sit, you know, ask special permission for another meeting and so on because our program is so full. So I wonder if we could consider making a ruling that anybody that we ask people who are not able to come, if they could send a number two or a replacement. Thank you.
I hear what you say, Honourable Vandermeer. I would hope that would not apply specifically in the case of the executive, the ministry per se, but that we're talking of entities and the DG and the administration. I think I understand you there. And well, we have that as a proposal. Do we have a seconder for that? Right, two seconders. Thank you. Or did you want to speak, Honourable Jeplangoma?
With a qualification that where possible, when I say where possible, you may find that with certain matters, they can only be handled by a certain person, maybe the DG, you know, etc. So, but the principle is the right. I support the principle with that qualification.
So many hands moving then. Yes, it's a very awkward one because there are certain issues within the current situation where, in fact, only the commissioner can respond to. But perhaps what we can agree on, for example, with respect to the quarterly report, you know, the financial report, that could have been addressed by the CEO, Chief Financial Officer, etc. And in fact, it was always two such engagements, as you will recall. So I think we'll craft the letter quite cautiously to ensure that it won't be used as an excuse not to address the committee directly, if I can put it that way. Certain matters, yes. But thank you very much, members. We will look at that. There is one other matter I would like to draw your attention to before that committee report. Where is the rolling report, please, Mr. Hermans? I think it's here, I saw it. No. There is a rolling report here on the Kenyan study trip, specifically for those members who went on the trip. And a further and final statement indicating that those who have not contributed to this, I understand that some of you may have. I'm looking at the ANC members first, those who went on. Have you given your contribution that was due last Tuesday, this Tuesday, Wednesday? Yes. And what about the DA? Sorry, I caught you at an awkward moment. Yes. They have. No, the committee said. And what about COPE? Right. So everyone has done this, and can you tell me when this was done? Was it done by Wednesday? It was done by Wednesday. For the record, it should be clear that two things are relevant to us for these reports. One is a policy of Parliament indicating that 10 working days will elapse before a first draft report. The first draft, of course, is not a rolling report. So we expect the first draft for Tuesday at Manco. A rolling report needs to state three things. Who was involved that day, the venue, and then the issues as outlined here. And this is not a matter I want to bring up again, and for the record, it's been some time since I've been asking for the rolling report. Rolling reports, I am assured, from those who know the policy, can be asked for a week later, literally once you've got it out the computer and put the full stops on. And it should be given to those who went on the trip in the first instance. But I understand this is the first time those who went on the trip, I may be incorrect, have received the rolling report that you have. So I do want that done in future, and the draft that we can work on in the committee, clear draft on Tuesday for Manco, so that we've got it on Wednesday to add to and pass, please, that final draft. Can we please have that, Mr. Hermans? On that basis, can we please now come to yourself, Honourable Mabasa, indicating the work of the subcommittee and, of course, any requests you want to put through the portfolio committee to be actioned.
Now, the subcommittee consisting of these members, Member Hill Lewis, Member Silau, Member Huang, and the Secretary, Mr. Hermans, and Mago, has already met twice, namely on the 7th and the 14th of August. And it has also been strengthened by the presence of Advocate Van der Merwe. And the issues that were done were the following. Number one, the Advocate Van der Merwe studied the proposal coming from the department, the bill, as well as the proposals that have been advanced by the department. And she agreed with some of the comments or the proposals, and she disagreed with others. And another area where she is not certain, she indicated uncertain, and in other areas she has counter proposals, and in other areas she has indicated that it is related to another matter, and in other areas she has indicated that the department will have to provide detail or will have to motivate. So, and the issues where the department has to motivate have been sent to the department, and I have learned that from Ms. Naidu that today the responses will come back so that they are available to the subcommittee, which will then study them to produce to produce a draft that will be submitted to the PC through the management committee. So some of the highlighted issues are the appointment of the auditor or the independent reviewer. So that's an issue that still has to be discussed. The audited financial statement, that's another issue. You'll realize here it is, you'll realize that the inputs were made by the auditing profession, so that those inputs, the auditing profession, on the main proposes that there be an alignment between the co-op act that will come into fruition, as well as or alongside the Companies Act. But from our side as a PC, we will always take the view that in some areas the Companies Act will form a proper guidance, but in other areas the Companies Act will be too strong or will be too demanding for co-ops. So it is in that sense that, you know, we will realize that some comments emanate from the recommendations as made by the auditing profession. So, and then number C, the cooperative to undertake an audit when it is not legally mandatory. It's related to what I was saying. the transitional provision for primary cooperatives from one category to another. This one, the department has to further motivate, because we could not quite appreciate the movement from one stage to another stage. The transitional, number E, the intention behind government support for co-ops, a policy matter. Of course, this one, the department will motivate, but we also have a view as a PC on the government support, because primarily the government has to render support. The question is what support. The intention behind the government support for cooperatives, what I was speaking to now, categorization of cooperatives. Those are the primary, the secondary, the tertiary, the apex. Limitations with respect to alignment, establishment and governance of cooperatives in relation to companies. It's what I spoke of. The final impact of establishment of council, tribunal, agency. We have started to discuss that in the PC, but the department will also further motivate that. General compliance by small cooperatives. This is related to what I spoke of when I spoke of Companies Act. And then we then move into number four, which is the broad areas of concerns. A, it is the auditing provisions, in a way it's what I spoke of, the reporting structure in relation to the registrar of cooperatives, mechanisms to promote intergovernmental relations, SALGA, province, national, NCOP, the contradictory provisions within the bill. These also are indicated by the auditing profession. They spoke at length when they made their input. Conflicting provisions and definitions as it relates to other legislation. It's a related matter to the above. But here the department is, together with their legal team, responding to some of these concerns as noted by Advocate Van der Merwe, concerns with respect to transferring the auditing requirements in the companies to cooperatives. That's what I spoke of broadly. And number five, other matters raised as it relates to processes. A, the impact of classification of bills on the process forward. The subcommittee agreed that the matter of the process forward as it relates to the bills will be submitted for consideration to the committee. And then B, engagement with cooperatives in KZN and Mpumalanga. There is a proposal that on the 3rd and to the 4th of September, such a visit be considered. The visit that would have been undertaken could not be undertaken because of the sittings. So the chair Honorable Frolic felt that it would compromise correcting of sittings, so it's better if a committee week is used for that. And so the visit will be undertaken on those dates. And then C, further response by parliamentary law advisor, meaning Advocate Van der Merwe. Subcommittee requested that the DTI forward its response document on submissions received to the parliamentary law advisor in order for her to amend her initial response and brief the subcommittee on Tuesday, the 21st of August. The only amendment here is that it will not be Tuesday, but it will be the Thursday morning and afternoon after the sittings. Then as we page over to D, the experts, based on the concerns with respect to the auditing provisions in the bill, the subcommittee agreed to seek expert advice on the matter. The subcommittee wishes to put the name of Professor K. Indenson from Kenya, who assisted the committee on the company's amendment bill. Am I saying the right thing here when I say from Kenya? UCT, for consideration. Then the subcommittee also requested that the secretariat source additional experts on cooperatives. Namely, here it will be a professor that contributed a lot on the oversight on the study visit that we had in Kenya, as well as people that are leading in economic areas or cooperative areas from various local institutions. The report ends there, but I will ask particularly Advocate Van der Merwe to put a bit of flesh on what I have just outlined. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mabaza, and thank you for the written report which we have. I would just ask staff to put a date on all the reports that are sent out to the committee. So this was sent out?
Yesterday.
That is the 16th of August. We do not want any undated material. Now, it's a comprehensive report, so that we appreciate. You've also noted here what has emerged, the concerns from, of course, what the Parliamentary Legal Advisor has also raised with yourselves. You've also put forward changes necessitated by Parliament's program itself and indicated that you would like a way forward with respect to how we will deal with the rest of the matters that our own legal expert will raise and the relationship or engagement with DTI. But we want this just very, very clear for the committee. As you're indicating to us, and I hope I have this correct, Honourable Mabaza, is that on the one hand, you spoke about briefing the committee here on the 21st of August in writing. You've amended that, have you, to Thursday? Verbally. You verbally amended that.
Yes.
So you just note that date has been amended verbally to accommodate all the members of the subcommittee. Okay. The second thing is the actual study visit, of course, which we accept. But the process itself, as it relates to DTI's response, and the engagement with our legal advisor. The legal advisor has prepared this matrix, fine, which the subcommittee has, which we've also had sight of. I think it will be best as what we've done with other committees, subcommittees, is that response of the legal advisor of Parliament is then referred on to DTI, so that DTI can take account of that, while maybe not always agreeing, but take account of it in its response back to us as a portfolio committee. And also, your responses should also be given to the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, Advocate Van der Merwe, so when she comes to the same committee, she is prepared with what you have already put forward. So that is, in one sense, an administrative matter to take us forward on the co-ops. The other issue relates to experts, which, you know, right at the beginning, informally, we were all made aware of how successful the Kenyan trip had been, but that the study visit members had encountered an expert there in Kenya. If I just try to get his name here, Dr. Waima. Waima, all right? And that he has been contacted, Honorable Mabasa, and also he has been contacted with respect to an expert from the Basque region, where we are informed the Basque region has got a very successful cooperative situation, environment, operating, etc. So that is in the process of being handled through the administration to contact those two people and to get both of them to Parliament to brief the committee in the same way we did with the companies one and with world with the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, if you recall. So we will have that on board. The final one is, and in fact the first issue you mentioned, Honourable Mabasa, was with respect to Professor Kathy Idenson, with whom this committee has developed a very good relationship in the past. And, you know, we're confident of her, her expertise, etc. Am I right then, Mr. Hermans? And we can also take that further on board and request that Mr. Hermans writes to her as well. The only thing which we may wish to put to the Manco is when do we want, I think we need to contact Professor Idenson immediately to ensure that the administrative processes are all in action so that we do have the remuneration or whatever needs to be done in the next week or so, so that in 10 days at the very latest, Professor Idenson can begin to share with us in the same manner she did with companies some of the issues that we may need to look at. So all of these here we can agree to. Nothing is out of the province of Parliament and unusual in this regard. But I do want to get your other members' comments before we proceed on to the final point. Any other comments? There are three issues here. Professor from the University of Cape Town. We have the experts. We have the study visit, or, you know, the oversight, right. Honourable Mabasa?
Actually, I think I will request, Comrade Chair, that at this stage we ask Advocate Van der Merwe to complement what I reported in view of the fact that the other subcommittee members are not here right now. So she is the only member that's here at the moment, including the secretary.
I don't like to do that if we haven't already studied it ourselves. Have we not all, have we had this for some time now, the report from the advocate? Have we? No, you see, only the subcommittee. So it's very difficult. I think that we need documents in front of us when we get that kind of comment, Honourable Mabasa. And only you have that document and your subcommittee, per se, and Manco. So others will not follow where it is. And there was some agreement in Manco that that should be before the subcommittee, but that, as soon as we have the response from DTI, we would then get the full response from the advocate, you know, and have the two together. And that that should be distributed as soon as it arrives. It should not await the chair. And when do we expect that, Mr. Herman?
DTI has been requested to submit the responses to Advocate Van der Merwe today, this afternoon. Advocate Van der Merwe will prepare, make the, would be the doc, but by Tuesday we'll probably have a document.
All right. On that basis, all we want from the advocate is to highlight three issues, the three key issues in her findings. Not clause by clause, just the three key issues, or if that, or if it's four.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With the public comments, I think mostly they can be divided into a couple of broad, high-level issues. Most important, I think, most of the comments related to accounting, and it seems that from SIPA, SICA, and IRBA, our accounting professional bodies, there is a warning to say that it seems as if the bill is confusing what the board of the cooperative should be doing with what the auditor or the independent reviewer should and can be doing. Joined with this is maybe a second issue that speaks to a framework, an accounting framework. Now, all your professional auditing bodies work according to a framework, and that is what they give to their members when doing an audit or a report of an independent reviewer. So they will have a list of things. If you have to give a quality assurance for this kind of entity, you need to check the following, and there will be a list for them to check. And if they then say, I have done a quality assurance, that is what they mean. For instance, they might say that I have checked the invoices of the company and they are all correct, but actually they've only checked 10% because that's what their framework tells them to check, that must be checked. So that kind of framework, it might be a good idea to get something like that for cooperatives as well, because then there's a couple of new issues like a social report, a management decision report that is being brought in and that is currently not part of an accounting framework. So that could be something good to remember. Other aspects, there was one cooperative, Praetorium Trust, and I've said to the subcommittee, I actually wondered if this person perhaps was a lawyer, because he or she made very good comments related to conflicts within the bill and the Principal Act. In other words, where amendments have been made to a certain section and it now contradicts another section in the Act. So that has been highlighted, and I've indicated where I agree with that. Lastly, I think the other major issue is actually policy. So there were quite a large number of public comments that related to why is this the case? Why was that following decision not made? Why is the DGI applying the Companies Act to cooperatives? How will the DGI make sure that certain things are complied with? All of those are policy issues that I think the DGI must come and explain to this committee. And then this committee will look at whether there are alternatives on the policy and then decide on the best policy to take. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Those highlight the three key issues, but they are very important issues that I know the Honourable Mabaso and his subcommittee are going to look at in depth as soon as they get the response, am I correct, from the DTI itself. But there were two other things that came up in the Manco, which perhaps is not clearly present here, unless I overlooked it, and that was the concern that the chairperson raised with me in respect of how broadly the advertising for public meetings had been made. You know, just with respect to the target group of co-ops, how many in that target group, in terms of percentage-wise, if you like, had become aware that they had the opportunity to make representations to Parliament? Am I correct? That was the substance of it. Now, we are looking into the matter, so I don't want to put a pronouncement here now, because I think we are aware that indeed, if judging from what we're hearing about Kenya, that this could be a very significant instrument of economic development, particularly in rural areas. And it'll be pertinent for us to do the best we can in our own country and ensuring that people are aware of this. So can we say from the chair, Honourable Mabaso, we will look into this and take it up with Manco again. Honourable Mabaso?
No, I appreciate appreciation on that, Comrade Chair, but with I would propose one addition, that in addition to communicating through media, which is the standard way and radio of inviting inputs, I think in conjunction with the list that DTI can make, and in conjunction with what parliamentary offices have as registers of workshops that they have run. If the specific questions and the bill could be sent directly to them as a parallel, maybe that way we can have a better communication with the existing cooperatives where we the direct communication. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Your points are noted, Honourable Mabasa, and as I say, we'll take it up with MANCO and see how best it can be handled. Because we want, yes, Honourable Kovasa.
Yeah, just on this issue, I want to make a just this observation. I don't know whether I missed it. You know, the 2012 has been declared the year of cooperatives by the UN, and I'm not certain that we have taken trouble to really popularize it throughout the country, just to create the enthusiasm among the people, but also to explain just how important this vehicle is to opening a lot more economic space to the majority of the people. Some of the research up to as late as last year suggests that people who are in the cooperatives that are existing are above the age of 35, which means the youth is completely absent in so far as participation in the cooperatives movement is concerned. And I think we need to take stock of that and build on what Comrade Bob has just been saying so that we garner a lot more support, not just for this bill, but for people to get to understand just how important it is to form the cooperatives.
I think what you're saying is important, and certainly the fact that we were not even aware that it was the international whatever symposium or whatever the other during the constituency period was a matter of concern, if you recall, given that it is co-op's year. And if we are going to be serious about it, then we have to take up the matter seriously. And I think what we need to do is develop the strategy. The one issue is legislation, which is in front of us. But I think for the record, for the minutes, we need to underline the importance of generating awareness among the population, among the people who particularly it would benefit, about the value of the co-ops in their communities and for themselves. And I don't think we are doing sufficient on it, no. But that's why I'm saying, let's see how we can deal with this. And the reason I'm sounding somewhat cautious, notwithstanding that the co-ops is almost a flagship bill, if you like, for our country, is because I'm looking at four other bills on my desk for this year. But because we do have a subcommittee dedicated to this, it should make it easier. And there has been a study visit. So we need to work. Honourable Mabasa, this is going to require, much like the intellectual properties, etc., which spent 2 days a week almost, you know, on the matter. It is an important issue. And I also want to make it clear that it's a piece of legislation. And legislation has to take priority over everything else. That is the part of our rules. It is part of our operations. And all of us as chairs need to be aware of that. We can't ignore it. But I do know that the subcommittee is now meeting regularly and has made plans, if I'm not correct, Honourable Mabasa, to meet even once or twice a week now, underpinned on the Thursday itself. Okay. So I do appreciate that you taking that matter forward and that your members are taking it seriously, comrade. Thank you very much. That's the co-ops for
DTI and I Advocate, etc. And we've just made one change here, on here, and that was the Thursday. We also, there's one other matter that the committee secretary referred me to, and that was, I think, point five. Is that right?
Yes.
We've already dealt with that in terms of the subcommittee's visit. The only other thing here is with respect to the 13th of August. Does everyone have a copy of this, which is addressed to me? Right, which gives you the purpose of the bill, the background, and the classification. This will remain an important document in your file. Thank you very much, and thank you to Mr. Hermans for doing that. As we come now to, there's no tea break as such. We're just moving on into what we've now called, it is the NCC. It is part of the committee's deliberations on this matter. And we do want our advocate, Manda Merva, to deal with certain issues, but in particular, if I can just put it this way, am I to understand, Mr. Hermans, that everyone has something dated this, which is referred to as the discrepancies noted in the discussion of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry had with the National Consumer? Has everyone had a copy? Right. We're very fortunate that this is, you know, we've made our notes, but this, of course, is matrixed for us. We can then address this, and I would like in the first instance, Advocate Van der Merwe, if you would address these issues. So over to yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honourable members, when the with the interaction last week with the National Consumer Commission, there was a presentation, members asked questions, and there was a response. On some of those issues, I was a little bit concerned because I felt that it did not seem to me that the full truth was put before the committee. So what I've done is I've taken my notes of that interaction and I've highlighted the things that concerned me, and I then went to have a look to see what have we found to date in documents before us, and where I couldn't find those documents, I made some inquiries. So this is what I have found. It is not to say that the Consumer Commission might not have an answer to this. It is simply what I have found. First of all, there was a comment made that the Consumer Commission took the City of Johannesburg Municipality to the Consumer Tribunal, which is not the correct wording. It was the City of Johannesburg Municipality that took the National Consumer Commission to the tribunal. Now, I felt the difference is quite important because it was given to this committee in a report of what they have done to ensure that companies are complying. And I felt that, you know, it is true they were before the Consumer Tribunal, but that was not the way it happened. Then there was also, on some of the presentation, they were indicated that they were concerned about the operations, because there are some limitations being placed on them by the National Consumer Tribunal in the way that it interprets the Act. Now, first of all, one comment that was made is that the National Consumer Commission is, according to the tribunal, not empowered to issue compliance notices, and further, the Consumer Commission is not competent to classify a conduct as prohibited. Now, I looked at the judgments. I did not find anything like that. In fact, the tribunal time and again found that the compliance notice was not properly issued because of certain circumstances, not that the commission is not mandated to issue. The same on the prohibited conduct. In fact, in the City of Johannesburg versus the NCC, the tribunal found that the compliance notice is defective because it did not set out the prohibited conduct. Now, if it was of the opinion that the Consumer Commission must first come to the tribunal to declare something prohibited, it would have said so, and that is not the case. They also indicated that they are concerned that the tribunal found that they don't have locus standi to apply for interim relief on behalf of a consumer. Now, locus standi simply means that you are in the right place, you're the right person to bring something before a forum. So, for instance, in this instance, members would be having the locus standi to bring something before this forum. You have the right to do so. Now, the reason for the judgment by the tribunal has not yet been published, but I went to have a look at the Consumer Protection Act, and in Section 114.1, it actually says that Section 114 deals with interim relief. And in the first subsection, it says, a person who has applied for relief to a court or the complainant in a complaint that has been referred to the tribunal may apply to a court subject to its rules or to the tribunal, as the case may be, for an interim order in respect of that application or complaint. Now, in my opinion, the Act is quite clear. The person with locus standi is the complainant and not the Consumer Commission. So, I mean, if the Consumer Commission has a problem with that and want to be able to bring that, then that necessitates an amendment to the Act. It's not the tribunal that is incorrectly interpreting the Act. Exactly. Then they also indicated in the presentation that the latest regulations of the National Consumer Tribunal does not provide for default judgment when a person is not complying with a compliance notice. And the Consumer Commission's complaint here was that this is in effect making a compliance notice ineffective. Now, that is a very serious allegation to make, because that is part of the function of the Consumer Commission and they must be effective. However, if you go and have a look at what is in fact the case, first of all, you need to start off with a compliance notice. And I'm really concerned about this specific allegation, because it indicates to me that there's not an appreciation by the Consumer Commission of what the Consumer Protection Act is actually saying. It says about compliance notices in subsection 6 of section 100. If a person to whom a compliance notice has been issued fails to comply with the notice, the Commission may either A, apply to the tribunal for the imposition of an administrative fine, or B, refer the matter to the National Prosecuting Authority for prosecution as an offence in terms of section 110, sub 2, but may not do both in respect of any particular compliance notice. I think it's quite clear that there's no default judgment involved when someone is not complying with a compliance notice. Default judgment, maybe let me just explain that. What the Consumer Commission, in effect, is saying to me is that they are of the opinion that a compliance notice is not effective until they get a judgment. Because what happens in a normal situation where you have default judgment is there would be a summons or a notice or something like that in a court, you know, to a plaintiff. You can't act on that summons. You can't act on that notice until you have a judgment from the court. So I'm claiming from you 100 Rand. I can't go and attach with the sheriff until I have a judgment on that 100 Rand. If you don't respond, I go to court, I get a default judgment. I have my judgment, I can now act. So in other words, your summons is not an effective enforcement method. You need a judgment to enforce it. Now, if you want to have a judgment on a compliance notice, you are actually saying your compliance notice is not something that can be enforced. And that is wrong. That's not what the Act says. The Act says you can enforce it. In fact, if you don't comply, it's an offense. There can be an administrative fine, or you can refer it for prosecution. So I then had a look at the rules of the tribunal, which is also not regulations, by the way. It is simply the rules of how they operate. And how the rules indicate is, first of all, it sets out in the Rule 3 what jurisdiction the tribunal has. In Rule 3.1a, it says it has the jurisdiction to hear the matter set out in Tables 1a and 1b. There's then also a list of others, but the one that's applicable is Table 1B, because Table 1B says that it can hear applications in terms of Section 100 sub 6 of the CPA for an administrative fine. So it absolutely has that jurisdiction. The Consumer Commission can approach the tribunal in terms of that rule.
Sorry, you just said that that's not secondary legislation. It is a rule. and perhaps you'll come back to that at the end.
What I maybe can explain by that is that regulations is something that is done in terms of an act. There's authority to do so, and that is then published in the Government Gazette, and it becomes secondary legislation. Rules of the tribunal is very much like the rules of the High Court. What it sets out is this is the procedure in accordance with which we are working. So you will say, in terms of this rule I am approaching, then everyone, the tribunal, your opponent, yourself, knows what process will be followed with this document. So the fact that the rule makes or does not make provision does not take away the jurisdiction. It simply actually confirms this is what we're doing. So where the default judgment then might come in is once there's an application for administrative fine, because your rule of having to listen to the other side comes into play. So the Commission will be expected to serve a notice on the company that's not complying and say, I am going to apply for administrative fine against you. If that company does not respond, then there's another rule, Rule 25.2, which indicates now you may apply for default judgment. So there is that statement of the Commission is totally incorrect. There is proper process in place, and the Act provides to do and to enforce in the way that they must. The next point that I made, they made some comments about the Auction Alliance case as well. Unfortunately, the court judgment has not yet been published, so I can't really answer, but I do feel uncomfortable about the way it is put, but I can't address that. The next aspect, then the responses came. There were questions and the responses came. And the Commissioner actually said that in the court cases, the Commission is time and time again being told that they are not complying, but there's no reasons being given. And I, in fact, actually think, having read the Auction Alliance case, I think this is probably what they were referring to, because in that case, in the pleadings, the Consumer Commission made the point that they have not received the reasons. That is where they say they haven't received the reasons. But that is the only case, actually, where the reasons were not published at the time that they were going to court. The tribunal responded by saying there's five Archlever files worth of evidence. It is not a judgment where you just give the reasons within a day. And even court sometimes takes months before they give reasons for a judgment, because you have to consider and you have to put it out in writing, and that might even be published, and in fact with the tribunal it will be published, so you need to be careful how you word things. But I've then gone to look at each of the cases, and I've set them out there, and I've discussed them with you last week, so I won't go through them, but I can confirm that every single case that indicated non-compliance set out full reasons. Having read those cases, I have no doubt why there was non-compliance. The reasons were quite clearly stated. The next issue is a bit more of a grey area, where there's an allegation by the Consumer Tribunal that the Commission is usurping the power of the Minister, which is a very serious allegation, and the Commissioner indicated that she takes offence to that. So what I've done is I went to look at the Act to see what the Commission may actually publish. What are they authorised to publish? Now, Section 22, and I'm now referring to the CPA, so I'll just name the section, indicates that they may publish guidelines that has to do with plain language, the use of plain language. And they may also publish these for public comment. The Act does not stipulate how or where it must be published. Government Gazette is open for anyone to publish. They work on money. So if you give a notice and you say, please publish, and you pay them the money, they will publish it. So there's no prohibition against doing it in the Government Gazette. So if they want to do something like this, for instance, in the Government Gazette, that will be fine. The next issue is Section 82, which speaks about industry codes. Now, what the Commission may publish here is they may publish them for public comment. That's only, they may not publish the final document. Again, the Act does not say where they must publish this. So they can do it in the Government Gazette, they can do it in a newspaper, wherever, in fact, because public comment, and you will know about this definitely, wherever it will be effective to get public comment, that is where it must be published. The final document is a regulation, and that the Minister must publish, that is what the Act says. Section 93 also speaks about a code of practice for the use of plain language, and this must again be published for public comment before being implemented. However, here the Act is silent on who must publish or where this must be published. So to me, that means if the Commission wants to publish this for public comment because they are developing something or they want to recommend something, I don't see anything wrong with that. Section 96 says that the NCC must issue explanatory notices on its procedures or opinions on its interpretation of the CPA, and they must also publish the findings or orders of the tribunal. Now, that is what the Act says. So I then looked at it and said, fine. Nothing prohibits them from publishing in the Government Gazette, and what they have published to date, I then looked at to see what they actually have published to date, is draft enforcement guidelines as well as final enforcement guidelines. Now, this was a document that the tribunal complained about. So, again, there was a slight not putting the right section before the committee, because when the head of the legal responded, he referred the committee to Section 82 and said that they've published in terms of 82. But that is not what these enforcement guidelines were. They're not industry codes. 82 deals with industry codes. But maybe that was an oversight. He was not prepared. We can maybe give them that. Now, these guidelines were published. Then there were guidelines for advisory opinions and clarifications. There's nothing that I could find that specifically requires them to publish something like this. It is about the internal processes of the Consumer Commission. Now, the one thing that I think the tribunal might have a point is that Section 120 of the Consumer Protection Act deals with the regulations that the minister may make. And one of those regulations include matters related to the functioning of the Consumer Commission. So all of these enforcement guidelines, how to issue an opinion, etc., that deals with their functioning. So it should actually be done by regulation. But to say that it's usurping the power of the minister, I think it's an argument. I think it could be debated both ways. You could say, but this isn't a regulation. The minister can say, but it should be a regulation. And so it could go either way. Other things that they have published were guidelines for developing industry codes, which the same argument goes there, guidelines for accreditation of ombuds schemes, draft consumer product safety recall guidelines. Now, Section 82 only gives them the authority to recommend an industry code to the minister. So this includes the recommendation for the industry ombud as well as the product safety recall. They don't have the authority to actually develop the industry code. They must simply make recommendations. So again, it could be argued that if you are publishing guidelines on how to develop, you are overstepping your statutory mandate. But again, it's an argument. I think it could be argued both sides. Then there was a request for expression of interest and the publication of the report on expression of interest. This dealt with people registering a preemptive block against any communication that is intended for the purpose of direct marketing of goods and services. Now, Section 11 does not require or authorize publication. It also does not prohibit it. So what I'm saying here, it could be seen as usurping the role of the minister, but it can also be argued the other way. I don't think that's a definitive issue. It's probably something, I think, where the minister is best placed to say, this is how I want this to be dealt with. I think that is maybe something for the minister to make the final call on. And then if necessary, then the Act must be amended so that certain guidelines are specifically given. The next issue was something that it wasn't so much a discrepancy when they said it, but when they said it, I thought I saw red lights going on, because this for me was a very serious allegation. The members commented that there is a need for the Commission and the Tribunal to speak to each other. They need to resolve these issues on an amicable basis. They must start communicating. The Commissioner's response was that they have a very thick file of correspondence, that they're not getting cooperation from the tribunal. In fact, that the tribunal wrote them a letter to say that they must stop pestering them and they will refer them to the Law Society. Now, referral to a Law Society, red lights went off in my head, because I thought, whoa, you don't just refer anything to the Law Society. You're usually talking about legal ethics being contravened. Yeah. So what I did was I asked the tribunal, this allegation was made. Are you aware of this? And may I perhaps see that correspondence? I even said, if you feel uncomfortable with this kind of comment, we can request it in a formal manner. The tribunal was not. They said, we don't have a problem. Here is the correspondence, and we will explain to you what happened to this. Now, first of all, the commissioner gave the impression that that letter was written in relation to general correspondence on the relationship between the commission and the tribunal. In fact, it was not. It was not even written by the commission. The response of the tribunal was to the attorneys of the commission in the Auction Alliance case. And what happened was, and I've got the correspondence and I can make that available, is there's an initial letter from the tribunal which was filed on the court file, the tribunal file, sorry, saying to both parties, saying the chairperson received a phone call from a person who identified himself as an attorney from the firm Buitamasane Tobajani that represents the Consumer Commission. The commissioner, the tribunal chairperson, the moment she realized that this person was talking to her about a case that is currently before the tribunal, told the person, this is improper, this should not be done, you're not allowed to approach me without your opponent being present to discuss the matter. It is not how it's done. The letter then set out what is the correct procedure if you need to put something before the tribunal. Then what happened is a letter was sent off again to the tribunal, putting out an argument. Sorry, Madam Chair. A letter was then sent by Buitamasane Tobajani, the attorney for the commission, to the tribunal, making arguments about the Auction Alliance case. The response from the tribunal was then to Buitamasane Tobajani saying, this is the second time we are talking to you about improper conduct as a lawyer, and we are considering to refer this to the Law Society. This is not how you act, and that is correct. That is the correct way to. I'm quite shocked by the action of Buita Masane and Tobajani, because you do not discuss something with the presiding officer without your opponent knowing exactly what you are doing. That is why there's pleadings, exchange of pleadings, argument is served, etc. So I think it is, I mean, it's quite a serious problem that arose here. And, the commissioner definitely did not set out the full picture of what actually happened here. Then,
to be absolutely clear, the tribunal denies that they ever wrote to the commission about this, but rather engaged in a correspondence with the attorneys. Okay.
Yes. The correspondence was not with the commission. It was not on a general correspondence aspect. It related to Auction Alliance. It was directed from the tribunal to the attorneys for the commission in response to an action taken by the attorneys for the commission. The next aspect was just a comment that was made to say that the report, you will recall that I summarized the judgments for this committee, and there was a report, a confidential report, where the chairperson of the tribunal made input to the minister. Now, having read the pleadings in the Auction Alliance case, I actually have more information on that. That report was actually done on request of the General COO, Ms. Jodie Scholes of DTI, where she wrote a letter to the chairperson saying, can you please go through your cases and give us some assessment on the committee? So it's not that the tribunal acted out of its own accord. They were requested to do so, and that is then where the report arose from. Now, the commissioner said that the report does not speak to the judgments. I differ. I've read the judgments. The report absolutely summarizes those judgments. There are a few things, and I've pointed that out to you as well, in my opinion, that is not in the judgment because it deals with aspects outside of each case. So that is not something that would be addressed in a judgment, but it would be something that if the tribunal sees this happening, they would comment on. For instance, the attitude towards opposing counsel, the quality of the pleadings, and so on. Then lastly, there was also a statement that the head of the legal services indicated that there's no tribunal judgment that indicates that the commission is exceeding its mandate. And I just quoted one example, which was the Vodacom case, where the commission, the tribunal said, you issued a compliance notice on a matter that is not allowed by the Act. Now, perhaps it did not say you are exceeding your mandate, but if you are issuing something that you're not authorized to issue, you are exceeding your mandate. So there is a case that does that. So, and then I think just maybe in short, there was a request from the members for the pleadings in the Auction Alliance case, and that has been forwarded to members. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think what is extremely helpful to us is having the matrix. You know, clearly we can peruse this at our leisure as well, and for your reference to it. What, to me, three issues have come up here, and I would also like comment from members. The one, which is something we would want to look at, is you have referred to the possibility of the Act, the legislation requiring amendment, you know, and certainly we would want to ensure that unclear matters in the or grey areas in the legislation don't lead to this kind of situation again. Now that to me is a clear situation we need to keep on board and get specifics here. The other one, which is a grey area in terms of how entities engage each other, and one to which I think the Honourable Van der Merwe did refer to in our engagement along with other members of the committee, was the need for cooperative engagement, working together, etc., and the respect, and which would have been appears to have been an attempt by the one party, but you've indicated that this was not always clarified correctly to the committee members. And in this respect, you've referred to various rules, guiding notices, and so on that we have seen here. In respect to the compliance, which I myself had a problem with in our last engagement, I was deeply concerned that the Commissioner indicated that there had been a misinterpretation of the legislation. And of course, you know, when you're not looking at it directly yourself and you're not a legal expert, you have to allow some scope for that. Now, you've made it clear that you don't believe that there was, in your opinion, there is no misinterpretation of the compliance notice itself, and that it's a matter of process and procedure and the manner in which it is enforced. Processes again. And the final point one wants to make in this regard, which is a serious matter here to me, is the issue about law societies and so on. I think we're all very, very clear in all our court cases that both sides need to be present when there is any engagement. I think that we don't have a problem with, and it's important that we are aware of that. So thank you for that. That's, I see it, that there are certain areas we would want to look at. The grey area about whether or not who can go to the Gazette, you know, quite clearly the Commissioner can go and publish something in the Gazette, and I think that's important for us to appreciate as well. And that is not without, beyond her preserve or mandate to do such a thing. It may be pertinent for the Department also to be aware of that itself, so that there's a fairness in the way we are dealing with the matter. But let me put it over to the committee for comment, because we do need to come to a position. Yes, I'm looking at the Honourable Mabasa, the Honourable Van der Merwe, the Honourable James, and the Honourable Albert.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. No, I think the interpretation and the articulation by Advocate Van der Merwe helps us as members of the committee, because as you indicated, Comrade Chair, we, some of us not being legal experts and not necessarily having been close to the interchange between the various parties, we were at a disadvantage when we engaged in the meeting. So this clarifies certain areas so that when we do meet with the commissioner, we will be at a better understanding level. So it's a note of expressing appreciation. Thanks.
Mabasi, indeed. Honourable Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chair. My first point, I would like to request whether I can ask about the status of some documents, and then I want to make a comment after that. The documents I'm referring to are one that has appeared on our table dated the 15th of August from the National Consumer Commissioner, and I don't know what the status of it. It's a very lengthy document. I've only been able to glance at it, but it appears to be a rebuttal on some of the accusations or discussions that took place at our previous meeting. So I want to know to what extent this document has been presented to our legal advisor, because some of the issues that they deal with have been dealt with in the whatever you call this document, discrepancy document, and I would imagine need to be read together. So that's the first question I want to ask. The other one I want to ask about is this rather alarming letter from the Banking Association of South Africa addressed to the Director General. I want to know what the status of this document is in terms, is this for our information, or are we expected to respond in any way? So those are, before I would like to reserve the right to comment as well.
Respond on some of the docs you've got today. As is practice, in the way my style of chairing and the way we do things within the rules of Parliament itself, is that when letters are communicated to me as chairperson, these are made, once I have studied them, they are made available to the committee. And I've done that with all the documentation which I have received, because I'm simply the chairperson of the committee. As to where we take it afterwards, you will recall with something to do with the arms deal at one stage, we may then seek a legal opinion as to, having reached the chairperson, are we then able, you know, to make this a public document and peruse it and etc. and take it further. That we then deal with, either we obtain legal opinion in that regard, but we also take a position from the committee. So these are open documents. They were secretly obtained, they were addressed to the chair when we informed DTI that we are going to be taking this matter up, and that was earlier on in June, if you recall, the end of May, June. They were here at the time, and we would be pursuing it, and pursuing it on two grounds, the financial management issues as well as the service delivery issues in respect of the mandate, per se. And these arrived, perhaps you may not have the covering letter, but these arrived sometime in the middle of July to us, prior to the meeting we would have had on the 27th. Okay, so these complaints came out there. I may have got certain telephonic complaints, but the problem with telephonic complaints is that they can always be rebutted later on, you know, because you may have misunderstood or misheard. And I do think that the banks one, which I'd hoped to take up as well later, but I'm glad you've brought that up. I don't know if that assists you in this regard. Thank you. That was part of the proceedings from today that was sent to us. You will recall that the committee requested from the commissioner at her last engagement with us that we wanted X and Y and Z. And some of these documents were then made available. Not all of them, but some of them. And they've now been made available to you. In fairness to the commissioner, I must say that as of Wednesday, when I requested the balance of the documentation, She indicated she would bring them this morning. Well, unfortunately, she's not here this morning. So we can only request that these are submitted next week, you see.
Jane. Thank you, Chair. Now, my questions have been answered in terms of the status of the documentation.
Thank you very much, Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I would just like to know, and perhaps it's not fair to ask the advocate this opinion, but I would like to get an idea whether there's any evidence that the National Commissioner, Consumer Commissioner, is trying to hide certain facts from us as to what is really transpiring in the cases. But I do take note of this rebuttal, as Honourable Van der Merwe has called it, and I haven't read through it as yet. And I guess the advocate must also go through that to see, you know, whether it actually makes sense. But I'm concerned about the polarization that is growing between the commissioner and the minister, and you know, I would like to get behind all the facts and understand exactly what's going on, and come to an understanding if the commissioner isn't a rogue agent at the moment. Isn't a rogue agent at the moment? The commission itself, not the commissioner, but the commission. That's just running around and not actually checking their own, you know, dotting their I's and crossing their T's and making sure that the legal due process is in order when they do take on big companies, which is important for the consumers out there. Thank you.
No, I know that, Honourable Alberts, you're always cautious on your use of adjectives. Perhaps I'm not as cautious frequently. So, yes, I think one needs to, yeah, the word rogue is really quite an emotional word, but let me leave it in your mouth. thank you very much. But I would also like to caution, and I should have said this earlier, I know when the advocate Van der Merwe began and started off, you indicated, used the words such as truth, etc. I think as we're not in a philosophical debate or meeting, it may be useful to talk of facts rather than truth. Thank you. Yes, Honourable Van der Merwe.
Thank you very much. I think from this committee, Chairperson, we have to express our desire to see the entities for which we are responsible for oversight operating effectively and, in this case, to the benefit of the consumer. And I think that we have a problem here in that regard. I think that what the Honourable Albert said, I'm not going to go into his terminology, but about his concern about the animosity between two entities of state is something that we have to pronounce upon. I am particularly alarmed at paragraph 82 of Ms. Mamadupi Mahlala Mutlaudzi's, the commissioner's, document, where she says, in a nutshell, the commission would like to indicate in clear terms that it does not agree with the document, and this is a document that was written by the tribunal and appended to the court case, as I understand it, and actually believes that it is an abuse of power, it is slanderous, and a product of an unlawful and ultra-various act by the tribunal. The commission does not agree with the process and the interpretation of the tribunal as set in the said report and believes it is impossible, to say the least, to put into practice the processes that the tribunal advises the minister that they are the correct, and believes that the interpretation that the tribunal has of the act can only lead to a total absurdity and cannot be practically applied. The commission believes that the tribunal, and then there's nothing after that. Now, I think this is extremely concerning. And I think, Chairperson, I don't, in my parliamentary career,
I haven't come across a situation like this. So I can't even give a recommendation about how I think we should proceed on this matter. Maybe somebody else can. But I think we do need, as the oversight body on this matter, to make a statement in some regard about the concern that we have regarding the relationship between two entities that are supposed to be working hand in hand together for the benefit of the consumer. So I'm afraid I can't offer a solution, but I think we should try and come up with one.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van der Merwe. We have heard from most members on the matter. Now, I must say, I've been a public representative since 1994, and I have never come across such a display of animosity between two entities, as you put it, animosity, which can only lead to a negative impact on the service delivery we would be expecting for consumers in this regard. But having said that, I also think that we have an obligation as this committee, under whom the entity falls for oversight, to ensure that we work within the constitutional requirements which were spelt out last week on the manner in which this constitution requires that entities cooperate, in which there is a clear flouting, absolutely no doubt. When your communication with each other is through lawyers' letters, I think it is a clear sign of a breakdown in communication. Now, the committee first saw this, and this was raised by Honourable Alberts, that there would appear to be this serious polarisation between the NCC and the minister, I think you put it that way, in which contract was engaged and entered into. And notwithstanding that such a contract was a continuation of what was already in place, the fact remains that in our constitution, the executive authority rests with the minister. And also within the constitution, that the respective minister has the constitutional right to delegate such authority to members of his staff, and the first line being, of course, the DG. And although this has happened, communication has not been conducted in that manner. Now, we said we didn't want to go down the contract route, per se, because we're not here as contract lawyers. But this is relevant to the situation of trying to get a positive operational relationship, can I put it that way, to the benefit of all South Africans. And I think that from the committee's point of view, there's absolutely no doubt that there has been this breakdown. We have also seen the breakdown with the facts before us, and I say the facts before us because we can only work on the facts before us, of serious misunderstandings by legal representatives that most lawyers straight out of university would be aware of to comply with certain guidelines. But that is an aside and would probably not occur if you didn't have this current breakdown in the environment of communication. Now, what is our job here? Our job is to see that the department and the entity has delivered on its services, on its mandate. We looked at the cases that had been conducted. We asked for a very clear response to our engagement last week, and that was, can we please have a record of the number of cases that the Consumer Tribunal has dealt with, the number that they, you know, within those cases, what they are still dealing with, what they have successfully dealt with, and the outcome, and what has not been successful. It's the same question we ask of all entities, so that we can give us some understanding of, are you making progress here? And if we think you aren't, to then go deeper into the ones that you have not, in your own record, made a success, you know, conducted successfully. But instead, we're not getting this clear response. And that also is another, adds another grayness and muddiness to the situation. If we had a clear situation, we did not deal effectively with this. You get this from SARS, the South African Revenue Services. We got it from SIPS. You will get it from other entities here. We got it from the National, you know, Standards Authority. But we're not getting it here, which makes our situation extremely difficult. We've looked at papers that have been sent before us legitimately for us to review here. We've also looked at matters that are of public content and open. And we've looked at the consumer commissioner's response. And even in the response that we have before us now, today, it is not very constructive to take us forward. And it, you know, I want to suggest that there is a need for us to have another meeting. However, we also have a very crowded agenda, and we all know that, number one. Number two, of the number of times we have invited the commissioner to come before us, three of them have been changed at the 11th hour. Notwithstanding the fact that they weren't sent the day before or the week before, but 2 weeks before and 3 weeks before. So it makes it extremely difficult for us to complete this process by the end of August, operationally speaking. So my proposal is to be considered, and in, you know, among us here, is on the one hand, we can get the three entities involved here. DTI is, of course, the department involved and the minister, as well as the NCC, with all their written responses, as well as the NCT. But that we don't need each of these organizations to be accompanied by 10 people, but rather by 3 or 4 relevant people that would be pertinent to this. And that, we can only make that kind of offer when we do have a full agenda. And by that, we don't have another day available to us. We've lost a Wednesday. We've got to look for another day, and now we've got to look for more time. So it's going to involve, if we agree on that process, it's going to require us requesting to go into house time. And I know opposition party members, and including the ANC, don't want that, you know, because it's a very important time of the year. So it's a very difficult one, or we sit at night on the matter. There is no other time. So I want you to be cognizant of the operational challenges we face, plus that. So that's the one proposal. The second proposal is that we utilize the information we have got. We send a final letter to the commissioner requesting the outstanding material, and then we take a position on that and send it to the House. Linked to the fact that this should also go before SCOPA, who does have more time and personnel and to address the matter. So those are the two proposals I would like you to consider. However, if you have a third proposal, please put it on the table. So I only want hands on that matter. Honourable James.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me just say three things. The first is that what is at risk is consumer protection, and that's a consequence of the paralysis that we are looking at very clearly. Secondly, it is very clear that the minister has an obligation to restore the entity and entities to professional order, that that must be done, whatever vehicles he has legally and constitutionally available to him. Thirdly, it's very clear that there ought to be from this committee a censure expressed, very clearly expressed, in the conduct of the commissioner, both with regards to the lack of full documentation that had to be supplied, and the fact that in her absence there is no replacement for us to speak to. And I would then conclude by supporting the second option that you presented to us, and not the first, because the information that we have before us, the briefing by the attorney, Van der Merwe, is sufficient cause to say that we've really taken this thing far enough. So, thank you.
Before I do, I want to attract the... all right, let me just speak quietly at the table for 1 minute. Any reason I said just a moment, I want a quorum for that decision. So I'm going to now give the right. On the second option, it was saying that, look, we have got sufficient document. Well, you don't have sufficient. We've got documentation from us, on the table before us. We also need to request. Well, there was all, that was also underlined by Honourable James. Request the balance of the documentation that was committed by the commissioner to the committee. Get our own legal opinion. This is the parliamentary legal opinion on the matter and therefore not biased in any way towards either one of the entities or three of them, the department plus the other two. And then come and deliberate on the matter and reach a position. Linked to that, our report is based on that and also recommend that it goes across to SCOPA, as we have, would not have had the full engagement with respect to the financial management. And how much time was not discussed? We didn't discuss the time, but obviously this would be next week. But I am going to allow, because this is a very serious matter that we've not encountered before. Let's just have a 5-minute adjournment, please. We are very, very fortunate in that we've got an honourable member, Ms. A. Ndlazi, who is on the Portfolio Committee of Communication and also Science and Technology, who is also, of course, then a member of the economic cluster, as it were. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us and making yourself available. Just so that the honourable member does not, as it were, vote a blank check, we can just briefly go over the issues at hand. We've been dealing with the National Consumer Commission itself and its service delivery, a very, very serious component, a critical component of that entity. It addresses, of course, the protection of consumers here. Now, we began this process last week in earnest, having dealt with it off and on earlier, and unfortunately, the National Consumer Commissioner indicated she was medically unfit to come down. In a phone call this morning. So we had to proceed on the matter before us. But of course, we also have a response, not all of her responses, but some of the responses to issues that were raised. There are still other issues that we would have liked to raise, but now we haven't had that opportunity. Secondly, we also become aware of what could only be described as a strained environment between the executive and the NCC, thirdly, that same, those same strained relations appear to continue with the NCT. So with that in mind, our focus being service delivery, bearing in mind that we would have had two engagements. The one which was finally set for the 27th of July, which was service delivery, which the consumer requested to be postponed, which was until the 8th of August. The second engagement, which was on the financial management as part of the quarterly report, which had been set up for the 3rd of August, which was postponed to the 8th of July, with one immediately following each other. We have not yet had the opportunity to deal with the second engagement, that is the financial management and the quarterly report. So we're going to leave that out of our exercise this morning in terms of the process forward and focus on the first engagement, which is service delivery. How effectively has the National Consumer Commission delivered on its mandate? What, how many cases did it deal with? How many complaints? How did it deal with it? How many were successful? How many were not successful? What actions were taken? Four, to ensure that the Consumer Act was effectively complied with. Having said that, there is there are a few proposals on the table. Of course, I can't take what I heard at tea break forward, so let me just put what is forward officially on the table and to where I think we were leading. And that is that we ensure that all of the responses, as far as possible, request the final responses to this engagement in writing today, so that these are made available with everything we currently have to members, but also to the parliamentary legal advisor, Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe. We get her analysis of the balance of the document that came today and that will be coming. And we then utilize part of our meeting, portfolio committee meeting next Wednesday, to deliberate on the matter. That is one aspect. The second aspect that was brought to the table, which needs to be finalized, is one that the Honorable James put on the table, that the Commissioner should be censured for the actions so far. And perhaps you would like to just clarify that for the table again, Honorable James.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have rethought my proposal in the sense that I think it might be premature to censure at this point. I think that we must have all the documents that we need in front of us before we can do that. So I would then revise my proposal to say that let's complete the process to our satisfaction before we issue a censure. Thank you.
So then essentially it's the process forward. How do we take it forward for Wednesday's meeting? Am I correct? So that is the proposal on the table. Can we have a seconder for it? Or a qualification? Honourable Kwabasa?
Chair, I second the proposal.
Any objections? No. On that basis then, Mr. Hermans, please ensure that the communication with the Commissioner goes out forthwith, that's immediately after this meeting, and that we set in motion processes that will relate to the Parliamentary Legal Advisor in a formal written request as to what we want, and can we alter the program accordingly. And the reason we're doing that, members, keep in mind, several meetings at which the Commissioner was due to attend did not take effectively at that time. So rather than lose another day or half a day or whatever, please can we ensure that we simply extend the meeting and we deal with matters more efficiently from the chair, so that we don't add, we don't lose any of the other items on Wednesday. Am I correct? You'll just fit that in. Right. I want to thank those members who did avail themselves of their time, but especially, we just need by show of hands, is that the important thing, Honourable A. Ndalazi, for helping us reach a quorum to take that decision. Thank you very much, Honourable Ndalazi. Thank you, and you're welcome to come again to the committee. Thank you, Honourable Members. We'll see you on Wednesday. Thank you.
Do you have a copy of this? I don't know. Yeah, I think we are.